Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome again, everybody. This is Brian Myers, and Shane Vanderhart is under the weather today. But not to fear, we have Bart Munson with us again today at co-host. Good morning, Bart.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be here. Always look forward to lending my voice to the microphone at Caffeinated Thoughts.
Well, we're glad to have you here, buddy. So I take it that you survived your food coma yesterday?
We did.
Snapped out of it?
We did, actually. I behaved pretty well. I am trying to watch my diet and caloric intake and those sort of things. So Thanksgiving is always a challenge, but I think I did all right.
Well, that's good. You might want to point out why you're having to watch all that. You had a procedure done just this past summer, correct?
I did. Had some chest discomfort, ran into the emergency room, expected them to tell me that I was fit as a fiddle and maybe had a little heartburn, but unfortunately I had a significant blockage in one of the main arteries, and so they went in and put a little device called a stent, a wire mesh stent, in and told me to behave, and at least thus far I'm following doctor's orders.
You're behaving? I'm so disappointed.
As it relates to eating and exercise, no other fashion am I behaving.
Well, it's Thanksgiving time, so football and food comas are abounding, and with the several turkeys we've got right here in the studio for your listening enjoyment, I trust we will have a lot of fun on this Thanksgiving weekend. Well, speaking of having fun, we have with us on our VIP line someone who's a lot of fun. What do you think about that, Faith? Are you a lot of fun?
Aw, thank you. Hi, Brian. Hi, Bart.
We have with us Faith McDonald of IRD, Institute on Religion and Democracy. Faith is the Director of Religious Liberty Programs at the IRD. And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Faith.
Well, thank you. It was great to be with you in the flesh for the conference, too.
Yeah, that was a good time. Thanks for IRD's support of the Caffeinated Thoughts briefing, and thanks for coming down and speaking, and we did. We had a great time.
Yeah.
All right. Faith, tell us about President Obama's plan to bring a whole lot of people here from Syria.
Oh, my. Well, I think everybody has heard that we are supposed to be getting at least 10,000 Syrian refugees from amongst all the millions of people who have been coming out of the Middle East. Part of the problem with that is a lot of them aren't Syrian and a lot of them aren't refugees. There is no way of screening the people, which is why many governors have said that they are not comfortable with having people come into their state. And the other thing is there's no prioritization of people who actually need the help. As you know, and as I wrote about in my article in The Stream, the Christians are the ones who are facing the most severe persecution in Iraq and Syria, along with the Yazidis. And they have not been getting asylum in this country. Out of almost 3,000 refugees who were admitted into the U.S. in the last fiscal year, only 53 were Christians. So,
Faith,
there's people who need it.
Tell us how these people are selected in the first place to come here.
Okay. Well, it's a hard situation even in that respect for Christians, because once ISIS has targeted Christian communities and made the Arabic letter N, the noon, on their houses to show that they're marked for either death or conversion to Islam, or to stay and supposedly be protected if they pay a protection fee, the jizya, they call it. But people have fled, and when they flee, they go to places where the UN has refugee camps, but the Christians can't stay in the refugee camps, because they fear both the other refugees, the Muslim refugees who are there, and they also know that ISIS is sending killers into the refugee camps specifically to kill Christians and abduct them and take the children.
Yeah, if I could ask a question. Our president told us that we are fear-mongering over 3-year-old children and women. Is that not the case? Are we to doubt what he says there?
I'm sorry, but my rule of thumb is doubt when the president says something. And in this case, yes, no, we don't fear 3-year-old children and women, although we have seen that women can be suicide bombers. But even according to the UN documents themselves, over 70% of the refugees who were coming into Europe were single young men under the age of 35. So there wasn't a lot of families or women and children. And we know, even according to ISIS's own statements, that they are infiltrating all of those who are coming into the U.S., be they refugees or migrants, and into Europe, to spread Islam, to spread their version of Islam, and to expand what they call the caliphate, the Islamic kingdom,
right,
all over the world.
Now, if it's 70% men, where are all the women and children from Syria and surrounding countries?
Well, they're back being in danger and suffering. We've seen with Hamas how Hamas uses women and children to hide behind. I think this is the same kind of thing, that the jihadist warriors are going out and doing their thing, but they're also, arriving on the shores of Europe with nice smartphones and things like that. And meanwhile, the women and children are back in the Middle East suffering.
Faith, you had mentioned in your article at Stream that FBI Director James Comey, I hope I'm saying that right, and also Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, and also Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson, have all admitted that Muslim refugees from Syria cannot be properly screened. What exactly did they say there? I mean, did they just come out and say the president is wrong? We can't possibly vet these people in any kind of detail? What exactly did they say?
Yeah, well, that is what they said. And they, since the president has made his statements, they've kind of backtracked a little, but they're on record saying that. I mean, anybody can look up the YouTube where they said that. They have no records for these people. And I think it was Comey who said, if somebody has done something, then we can compare their records. But if they haven't done anything, we don't have a way to compare their records. So it's a very dangerous situation, even if it's a very small percentage. And what many people, including those who get criticized by the left and by a lot of Christians, actually, who think, we should just be warm and inviting of everybody. But what they don't realize is the best situation would be to get rid of ISIS and to make a safe haven for the people who are suffering. They don't want to leave their land. If they're real refugees, it's not because they want to leave and go to another country. It's because they're forced to because of the situation. And they would much rather stay in their homes. And for years, even way before ISIS, when the U.S. was involved in Iraq, the Iraqi Christians were asking for a safe haven. And so were the Yazidis and people, all the religious minority groups. I mean, there's lots of religious minority groups who go back to biblical days. The Mandeans are people who worship John the Baptist. You know, don't ask me why, but they're worshipers of John the Baptist. And they're being slaughtered by ISIS as well because they're considered infidels. But all of these people would much rather that they had a protected area, that they would defend themselves if they had weapons. I mean, the Christians in Syria have their own army, but they have like 1940s weapons. If we would help them, they would rather die fighting than they would being slaughtered by ISIS.
So you're offering an alternative to the compassion argument, because that's, of course, as Christians, that's what we are hearing, is that why would we lack the compassion to take these people in? You're saying compassion actually is working over there to make a safe zone and to help them really get back to normalized life in their own land.
Yeah. Yes, and even helping in the refugee camps or in the communities where the Christians are who aren't in refugee camps, the money goes a lot further over there than it would trying to bring everybody here. I can't remember the exact amount, but it's a lot of money to settle a family in the U.S. I think it was something like $40,000 for the first year. You know how much you could do with $40,000 over there? You could practically build a school.
Right.
So you could do much better by helping the people over there. And I really do get a little impatient with Christians who talk about it as if the United States was one giant church, and put the duties of us as Christians and as of the body of Christ onto the United States government. I mean, we never do it for anything else. So why is it? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody talks about separation of church and state until it comes to this. And then suddenly we're supposed to be one giant church that follows the Bible and lets in the wayfarer and the stranger.
That's absolutely true. Usually when believers mention biblical principles and Christian worldview, the left recoils at the thought and accuses us of wanting to institute a theocracy. However, when they feel they can use Jesus as an argument against the right, suddenly they become seasoned theologians and Baptist preachers.
Exactly. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line with us we have Faith McDonald, who is the Director of Religious Liberty Programs at the Institute on Religion and Democracy. Do you have a comment for Bart's comment?
Oh, I totally agree.
I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, that's okay. I totally agree. And I think, you know, the Bible has very different responsibilities for governments than it does for individual Christians or for churches. And the first responsibility of the government is to protect its own citizens. So this is not, you know, it's not a big come to Jesus moment. It's being a responsible country for your own people.
Well, as I understand it too, Faith, there are neighboring nations there that are refusing to take refugees that have the capability to help. Can you speak to that at some point?
Well, it's because they too are afraid that there are ISIS terrorists amongst the refugees, and they don't have a way to filter out who's a terrorist and who's not either. And, you know, even when we talk about the fact that, well, we know that if we were to allow people in who are Christians, they're not terrorists, then you get charged with this religious test. But instead of calling it a religious test, we should be saying it's a persecution test. The people who are persecuted and who are in danger of losing their lives should be the first ones that we would let in. We have always done that in our history. The UN definition of a refugee is someone who has a credible fear and well-founded fear of persecution, and that is the Christians and the Yazidis, basically, and the other religious minorities. So instead of calling it a religious test, as the president does, because it doesn't fit in with his narrative, we should call it a persecution test.
Faith, you know, one of the things that we hear frequently is that America is a nation of immigrants, and we've had waves of immigrants from various countries throughout our history. What makes this situation, this specific situation with the Syrian refugees, what makes this different than anything in history in terms of immigration to the United States?
Well, I have to go back to the idea of Islam. And, you know, even in past generations when Muslim people have come in, they have not been a threat like this. They haven't been part of an agenda of jihad. And even if they're not, we're not talking about violent jihad, we know from documents that the Muslim Brotherhood in America had that were found in a house about three blocks from where I live, actually, by the FBI, that there is what they call civilization jihad. And those who want to change our country to part of the Islamic Kingdom, the caliphate, just infiltrate and change things little by little. There doesn't have to be violence. Frankly, we're bowing down and giving in without any kind of struggle, so there doesn't need to be violence. It's political correctness and kind of national suicide that's going to get us.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the biggest things that is misunderstood is, for the most part, Muslims that strictly follow the Quran are not coming to America to blend in and become part of the culture.
They're not coming here to assimilate.
Right. They are coming to begin a new chapter of their worldview and their form of dominant government practices.
About half a minute left, Faith.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I would just say quickly, too, that the president is going to make a genocide determination, we have heard reported, about victims of ISIS and leave out the Christians. So here you go with a religious test. The religious test is that the Christians fail every time. People need to speak out about this.
Faith, thanks for coming on board. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we'll be back in a moment. Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Brian Myers and Bart Munson sitting in for Shane Vanderhart. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Well, in this segment, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to maybe move away from more serious discussion. And we're going to talk a little sports today. On our VIP line, we've got Steve Myers, who also happens to be my son. Had to throw that out there.
And why'd you have to look down to read his name?
He forgot him already.
We've got Steve Myers of Cyhawk Thoughts with us. And Steve, along with Chuck Utek, started Cyhawk Thoughts in 2011 to be a single source of information for fans of both Iowa and Iowa State athletics. Steve, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Thanks for having me, and I kind of agree there. I don't know why I had to look down at the paper to get my name, but yeah.
I hated to call him out on that, but it was obvious.
I know how much I mean to him.
Okay, Steve, we had We had some big-time events occur in the Cyclone football program recently, and Athletic Director Jamie Pollard and Head Coach Paul Rhodes both showed class at a tough time for both of them, wouldn't you agree?
You know, definitely. I think a lot of that just has to, you know, come from the type of guy that Coach Rhodes is. You know, he loves the university, he loves the state, and, you know, much like Dan McCarney, was kind of the face of Iowa State program for quite a long time. I doubt he was much of a face as Fred Hoiberg did during his tenure, but, you know, he did a great job of, you know, being the face of the football program. And, you know, those motivational speeches, you know, kind of put Ames, Iowa on the map.
No, I think you're right. I think he was a lot like McCarney in the fact that he was a huge supporter of Iowa State University, and everybody liked him, real positive guy. And I think this was another really tough call for Jamie Pollard to make. I know it hurt when he got rid of McCarney, so this one had to hurt as well. But I think, again, I think I watched both the press conferences, or at least their statements in the press conferences. I thought both those guys showed a lot of class.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. And, you know, I think, you know, the thing about Dan McCarney and the thing about Paul Rhodes is that they both ran outside of, you know, what they did for the community and what they did on the field. They just ran the program with class. There were no NCAA infractions, you know, during either of their tenures, no scandals like you hear in a lot of college athletics.
Right.
Turned kids into men and held them accountable. You know, there was a lot of dismissals between the two during their times as well. So, you know, they just ran a clean program, and I think that's, you know, kind of what Jamie Pollard was looking for, and he got it out of both of them.
Hey, Steve, you know, the timing of this parting of ways was right after the Kansas State game. What's your perception? Did he get fired or let go as a direct result of the meltdown against Kansas State, or was that just hastened by a couple games, hastened his being let go?
I would say the latter. It was pretty much hastened. He was on the hot seat, I think, even going into last year's season. Obviously, a two-win season last year. Got that seat a little more heated this year. And I think there was a couple factors that kind of came in. We had a lot of talent in the skill positions this year with players like Montgomery and Alan Lazard and Joel Wanning coming in, a really stud freshman running back in Mike Warren and a pretty solid defense. So the talent level on the team this year really should have accumulated more than three victories. And up to this point, you know, He hadn't showed that he could win close games or hold leads in the second half. And I think it hastened it, but I think it was the last two seasons, the entire body of work that really kind of, you know, tipped the
scales.
Tipped
yeah. How many wins would he have had, you think, to retain his job? Would he have had been bowl eligible?
You know, that's a good question. I think maybe five would have potentially given him another season. I think five, with one of those five being the Oklahoma State game this year, would have definitely secured it, because that would have just been another one of those signature wins that he's known for.
But along those lines, Steve, given the strength of ISU's schedule this year, what were realistic expectations going to be? I mean, they played a lot of really tough teams. Monster schedule.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at the Toledo game, which was a field goal with 2 seconds left away from being a victory. The Iowa game, you know, you're ahead the entire first half. You
can't dominated the first half.
Exactly. And then you couldn't move the ball in the second half. You know, those two should have potentially been wins. Then you can look at the Oklahoma State game and now this Kansas State game. You know, you take those into consideration, he could have a 7-win season right now.
Yeah, in large part, you know, coaching medal is earned by halftime adjustments. And the fact that they played a number of significant good first halves, but not second halves, is, I think, usually a direct reflection on coaching and halftime adjustments.
I agree. And I think they played not to lose versus to win when it came to the second half of a lot of games. And I think that was the biggest downfall. Controlling the clock is obviously a huge part of the game, but to put points on the board in the second half can actually do more damage than just controlling the ball at times.
Do you think things would have gone a little more different? Excuse me, a little better, and looked differently had the Mangino firing taken place earlier?
Well, I would, you know, looking back, you know, that may have been, you know, a really good thing for the program if he wasn't there to start the year. We played some of our best football after the Mangino fire. You know, so you kind of wonder, you know, what was he doing to the program that was so detrimental to really hurt us on both sides of the ball, it seemed like, because our defense started playing better once he was gone as well, and maybe that was because they were more rested. I'm not sure.
Now, speaking of Mangino, of course, I think everybody heard about the tweet that he
a lot of class there.
Right, exactly. Now, I never heard of a response to that by Rhodes or anybody in the ISU family. Did I just miss that, or did they intentionally ignore that?
I believe they intentionally ignored it, and, you know, that kind of frustrated me about Mangino. Rhodes brings him in as the offensive coordinator. Obviously, he had done really well at Kansas, but there were some character flaws that Rhodes looked past in order to bring him here. Obviously, those showed through when he decided to send the tweet about the fat lady singing.
That's really a low thing to say, too, given the fact that his son was still at Iowa State.
Right.
Seems
yep.
really.
Yeah, he did himself no favors there if he aspires to get back into college coaching.
A lot of people won't forget that.
Right.
Steve,
sure.
what does Pollard need to do with this program going forward to be successful? Because clearly this is not an easy job for the head football coach. Is it as simple a thing as hiring the right coach, or is there more to it than that?
Well, the coach is going to be a huge factor, obviously, but it's got to be a coach that's able to recruit. What Iowa State needs to do in order to produce winning seasons, right now, since we're in the now, right now, they need to keep the existing players during this transition. They have a lot of talent still coming back on both sides of the ball. That's going to be the number one goal, is keeping all those players. Someone like Alan Lazard has already come out and said, I'm here, I'm Iowa State through and through, which is going to be huge for that next coach.
Right.
And maybe potentially huge for players that sit there and see Alan stay, they might stay. But, you know, Pollard's got the facilities up to par with a lot of schools in America right now, and that's going to be a huge, huge help. But this new coach has got to come in, and he's got to recruit better talent. Rhodes recruited some talent, but he recruited players that he was willing to develop. And I don't believe in the Big 12, with the schedule we have, that you can only recruit players to develop. You need to recruit talent as well. And I think the number one thing for Iowa State at this point, if you want to see some wins in that column, you got to hope for an expansion and a 12 team league.
So who should Jamie Pollard be going after to be the next ISU football coach?
I think,
or what have you heard?
I think Gene Chizik is available, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's.
I don't think he's going to make the short list.
And, you know, Bart, you bring up a good name there. Paul's winning seasons and his bowl seasons were in his first four. A lot of the players that he was using, Gene Chizik.
Interesting.
So,
that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of goes to show, you know, was he recruiting at the level he needed to be? But in terms of the new head coach, man, there's a lot of names out there right now. You know, so a couple of them that you know, I would really like to see. Kendall Briles, the offensive coordinator at Baylor. Scott Frost, the offensive coordinator at Oregon. Lincoln Riley, potentially the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma. If you can see what I'm getting at here, it's offensive-minded people, because in the Big 12 you have to have a stout defense, but you got to have an offense that can put up plus, you know, 40 plus points a game.
Now, is there any mention of Les Miles? Because I did see that LSU is talking about buying him out, and he's a big name, big time coach. A, would ISU be interested in him, or B, would he be interested in ISU?
Yeah, I have a section of coaches called in our dreams. Les Miles being one of those. The other one, Tom Herman from Houston. The thing about those two guys, they're going to cost a lot of money. Now, maybe Les isn't going to be looking for a lot of money, since he may be getting a $15 million buyout.
Right.
but still, those two are going to be worth quite a bit of money. And the other problem that Iowa State is facing is I believe there's going to be potentially 15 BCS openings available.
Wow.
And when you have USC in the mix, Miami and South Carolina, let's just sit there and say Iowa State's not at that level with those schools. So they're going to get the cream of the crop in terms of the coaches.
Yeah, so ISU probably their best bet is going to be getting an offensive coordinator, somebody that's not a head coach at a big-time school.
Yeah, but there are some head coaches out there. Navy's head coach, Justin Fuente from Memphis, Rod Carey from Northern Illinois, Matt Wells from Utah State. Willie Fritz has actually come out and kind of lobbied for the Iowa State job. He's from Georgia Southern. And then the one that I'm kind of high on as well in terms of head coach is PJ Fleck from Western Michigan. The other thing that's kind of crazy is most of these guys are young. It seems like we're in a transition right now where young, offensive-minded coaches or coordinators are kind of a hot commodity. So we'll see if Pollard decides to go that route.
Now, you know, I saw an interesting statistic the other day. They were, and pardon me for bringing up the Hawkeyes, but
that word again.
They showed a graphic that compared the Iowa Hawkeyes to several of the other teams in the top four right now. And, you know, like Alabama and those type of schools. And it listed their four- and five-star recruits. And those other three schools had nearly 30 players that were four- or five-star recruits. I think Iowa had seven or eight, and they were all four-star recruits. What does a school in Iowa have to do to get at least a handful of five-star recruits?
That's a great question. And you know, I'll speak on the Iowa side because they're a lot closer. Getting to the college football playoffs, going to a Big Ten championship, that's the number one thing right there. You know, get them in front of the national eye, you know, get in front of some of these kids that are like, wow, you know, the black and gold, they're playing in the college football playoffs. That's going to absolutely be huge for Iowa. And the thing about Iowa that makes them so special is, for instance, just an amazing job with the lines.
Yeah.
You win football game on the lines. Multiple, countless offensive linemen have gone to the NFL under Kirk. So that's why Iowa has been so spectacular without getting the four- and five-star recruits, is because they just have great lines on both sides of the ball.
Steve, less than a minute left. Coach Rhodes says that this current group of kids at Iowa State will be bowling next year. He says they're that good. Your thoughts on that? We got about less than 30 seconds, probably.
Yeah, I agree. If you look at the skill positions, which are huge for a team, both at the wide receiver, the running back, those are stacked. Lanning could be a great quarterback going forward, and I'm telling you right now that defense with Tucker in the middle is pretty good.
That was Steve Myers of Cyhawk Thoughts. Steve, what's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's at Cyhawk Thoughts, all one word. And then you can follow us on Facebook as well, Cyhawk Thoughts, all one word.
Steve, thanks a lot for coming on the show. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment. Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries and Scott Owen. offering biblical counseling and conciliation. Give Scott a call at 515-292-7141 or check them out at www.crosswalkcounseling.org. This is Brian Myers with Bart Munson sitting in for Shane Vanderhart, and this is our news segment, otherwise known as News You Can Use. All right. First up is Princeton University. Woodrow Wilson's Princeton legacy may be expunged. According to NBC News, Princeton University's president, under pressure from the African-American student activists, said Thursday night that the school would begin a process to consider expunging the legacy of former President Woodrow Wilson from campus. The agreement, signed by Princeton President Christopher Eisgruber, Christopher Eisgruber, ended a 32-hour sit-in at the president's office. Students with the Black Justice League entered Nassau Hall around noon on Wednesday, calling for the Ivy League University to acknowledge racism within Wilson's legacy and take actions to improve cultural sensitivity on campus. Well, Bart, what do we say about this latest movement now that we have campus to campus, you know, to basically extort something out of the individual universities in question over who knows what?
Yeah, this is just another example that has come to light in recent days of what is called sort of like a community agitating within the campuses of our colleges and universities. And Woodrow Wilson, I think, is well documented to have had some racial discrimination practices while he was at Princeton. But that was sort of a disease of that time. He was active in it, but he certainly didn't invent it. And
You can't make the case that he was really that much different than anybody else was at that time.
Correct. And, you know, it makes me think that if we are scrutinizing flawed human beings from yesteryear,
give it up.
What are we going to be in the minds and the eyes of college students, say, 30, 40, 60 years from now?
And just give it up, because if you're going to pick apart everybody on the basis of their flaws, let's just not talk about history, period.
But it seems that the flaw of that is the worst in the minds of our youth today has something to do with race. It may not be anything else. Somebody could have been an adulterer. Somebody could have been a tax cheat, and I don't think it's going to get a second look. But the issue of racism has been elevated to the worst sin in world history.
Right, and I understand that, but still, it strikes me as just odd that all of a sudden, you know, after literal centuries of racism in North America, now all of a sudden we've got to do all these things because these black youth say we must in order to, I suppose, deal with our white guilt. I don't know.
Well, and part of it is that they are being coddled by the college administrators and the professors. They have created and cultivated an environment on campuses now that is coming back to haunt them.
It's like they've created Frankenstein's monster.
Right, as evidenced by the president of Missouri, University of Missouri, and the chancellor resigning. They have presided over that and helped create that environment. Now they are a victim of it.
Well, on a related note, according to the Daily Caller, a new Pew Research Center poll shows that 40% of American millennials ages 18 to 34 are likely to support government prevention of public statements offensive to minorities.
Yeah, that is absolutely astonishing, a statistic. Almost one out of every two, at least seemingly, are willing to lose some of their most natural and historical rights as human beings.
Yeah, it's codified in the Constitution.
Right.
Well, we don't need that.
Yeah.
It should be noted that vastly different numbers resulted for older generations in the Pew poll. Yeah. Well, yeah, that should come as no surprise. Okay. Mr. Obama compares Syrian refugees to the pilgrims on the Mayflower.
Why, of course they are. They're identical, right?
This Thanksgiving, President Obama is calling for Americans to lend a helping hand to another group of pilgrims fleeing persecution.
We really should have kept faith on for this one.
Quote, nearly four centuries after the Mayflower set sail, the world is still full of pilgrims. Men and women who want nothing more than the chance for a safer, better future for themselves and their families, Obama said in his weekly address. What makes America, America, is that we offer that chance. The president praised Americans who have offered to open their homes to refugees fleeing war-torn Syria. One woman from Pennsylvania wrote me to say, money is tight for us in our household, but I have a guest room. I have a pantry full of food. We can do this. Another woman from Florida told me, Mr. Obama, that is, her family's history dates back to the Mayflower, and she said that welcoming others is part of what it means to be an American. He added.
Now, what is ironic about all this, Brian, is that suddenly the pilgrims this year, because of the Syrian refugee situation, now they're looked at in a favorable light. Because typically,
how did that happen?
Yeah, because typically every other year the pilgrims were rapers and villagers of the land. I mean, raping and pillaging the land and mistreating the Native Americans. And
their history should be expunged at every university
exactly,
as well, right?
But this year it's convenient to use them in another way. So it just makes you very cynical of the way that some of our political leaders look at history. They just try to manipulate it in a fashion that's going to be convenient for them at the time.
Well, and it's stunning, too, given what we've already spoken about on the show relative to the lack of vetting that's being done, the unfair, for lack of any other word, percentage of folks that are Christians that are not being allowed entrance into the United States. And also, of course, the stated purpose of some of these folks to come over here and infiltrate our culture. And here we are making an analogy to the pilgrims. I give up. Okay. Democrats like socialism. Really? You think? Well, this is from the New York Times. Senator Bernie Sanders' recent speech explaining his democratic socialist ideology carried a little risk among supporters and other Democrats. A solid majority of them have a positive impression of socialism, according to a New York Times CBS News poll released this month. 56% of those Democratic primary voters questioned said they felt positive about socialism as a governing philosophy, versus 29% who took a negative view.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised they had 29% of the Democrats polled said they saw it as negative.
Yeah, I saw some data from a Pew Research poll from a few years ago. When they looked at the demographic of 18-year-olds to 29-year-olds, there were more in that demographic group that had a positive response to socialism as opposed to capitalism. There was more that favored socialism over capitalism. And that's amazing. But you know what? That is a byproduct of about 30 years of indoctrination. We used to call our universities the institutes of higher learning. Now it's higher institutes of higher indoctrination. And we're starting to see a large group of people that are out and proud socialists, something I thought I would never see in my lifetime.
Right.
But over the last few years, they've suddenly come out of the shadows, and you see them resonating or see Bernie Sanders resonating with a large base of youth. It's a very, very scary time to consider our political future.
It is. You know, my father was a Democrat, and in his day, there were differences of approach with Republicans, but it wasn't until the radicalization of the party starting in 1972 that you really saw this incredible divide and this huge swing to the left by the Democratic Party.
JFK was a fiscal conservative.
That's right. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Your friend just had a huge fight with her husband. She is frustrated and can only think about how bad the conflict is and will become. How can you help? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Our first reaction to a friend like this is to listen. This works initially, but in the long run, we tend to only be encouraging negative thinking and gossip. You're not a marriage counselor, but what can you do? One thing you can do is help her adjust the direction of her thinking. Right now, she only sees the bad that conflict promises, but she might benefit from seeing three good things that conflict offers a Christian. I use the Peacemaker's Principle pamphlet by Peacemaker Ministries to show that conflict is an opportunity to do the following: glorify God, help you become more like Christ, and to test your unconditional love and service. If you would like more materials on how to help a friend, stop by our counseling center in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Brian Myers and Bart Munson sitting in for Shane Vanderhart. There's plenty I have to be thankful for, and this time of year we are hopefully all reflecting on our blessings. But today I'm really thankful that Bart Munson is here with me.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Thanks very much for sitting in today, Bart.
No problem.
I really appreciate it.
And I appreciate being here. Appreciate the invitation.
Oh, always glad to have you aboard, buddy. Shane, eat your heart out. We got another buddy here in the big dog's chair. All right, we got to mention our giveaway, Ron.
Oh, yes.
We are giving away a book by Rebecca Lauk. It is called, quote, "I Like My Disease Rare," unquote. Catchy title.
Yeah.
"I Like My Disease Rare." We're giving that away along with a $25 gift card to Caribou Coffee, which, of course, makes sense given the fact that this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Yeah, you cannot buy decaffeinated coffee with it. That's the only caveat, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Or hot chocolate.
Let's not go there. Okay, you can enter for our giveaway by going to caffeinatedthoughts.com and click on the As Heard on the Radio button. There is an As Heard on the radio button there. Mm. Yes.
There you go.
Okay. Make sure that you enter the winning word, which is truth. What is
that,
Ron?
Word?
Truth. What is that, Bart?
Is that the truth?
Truth. Okay. Make sure you go to the website and get signed up.
Truth.
Okay. And now, we've come to my favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
All right. This is from Reader's Digest. We're going to do a little Thanksgiving. Really? A little Thanksgiving thing happening here. For three decades, the Butterball Turkey Talk line...
He likes that.
That's it. Butterball Turkey Talk line has answered the desperate pleas of hundreds of thousands of holiday cooks. As you can imagine, in that time, the staff of 50 plus experts has heard some pretty outlandish tales of Turkey Day mishaps and fielded some truly bewildering questions. Here are just a few. A proud gentleman called to tell the staff how he wrapped his turkey in a towel and stomped on it several times, breaking the bones so it would fit into his pan.
My goodness.
Okay, another gentleman called to tell the operator he would cut his turkey in half with a chainsaw. Okay, here's the, wait for it.
The tool man. Wait. Tim the Tool Man probably made that call.
Wait for it. And he wanted to know if the oil from the chain would adversely affect the turkey.
You could have used some butter to lube up the...
Yes. Imagine it'd go down easier with that lube on there. Yeah.
A disappointed woman called wondering why her turkey had no breast meat. And after a conversation with the talk line operator, it became evident that the woman's turkey was lying on the table upside down.
Well,
I thought the turkey had
that. That would do it.
I thought maybe it was a mastectomy.
There you go. That's the angle I was looking for.
Yeah.
We have standards here, okay?
Well, there you go.
I don't know where they're at.
A new bride cooking Thanksgiving dinner for the first time in a small apartment-sized oven wanted to make sure her turkey wouldn't expand during cooking, as baked goods do, and thus get stuck in the oven. So what do you do?
You remove the...
You want to take the yeast out of the turkey so it doesn't rise too much.
That's the yeast you could do.
Yes. Well, that's that bad. Was a good one. I like that.
Okay, a lady from Colorado called about how to thaw her frozen butterball. She proudly shared the fact that her turkey was stored in a snowbank outside. It had snowed the night before, and it dawned on her that she didn't know where the snow, where it was in her snowbank. Okay, send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show. Get better, Shane. That's an order. This is Caffeinated Thoughts. Brian Myers and Bart Munson. Take care.